Throughout our hymnal and across the internet, there are these beautiful five-ish line mission statements of Unitarian Universalism. I'm sure some of you have come across them from time to time in doing that infamous Google search of what is Unitarian Universalism, no matter how long it is that you've been a member of a congregation. They all have a similar feel, and each could be a chalice lighting, a meditation, a banner, depending on your mood. Some trace back to the early Unitarians of the 20th century. A word or two changed over time, and they read something like this. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Does that sound familiar? Well, this past week I came across a similar offering by the Reverend William Schultz, a version I hadn't ever heard, and one that I continue to play around with in my heart and in my head. This is the mission statement of our faith, he says, to teach the fragile art of hospitality, to revere both the critical mind and the generous heart, to prove that diversity need not mean divisiveness, and to witness to all that we must hold the whole world in our hands. This month, we spend our Sundays together considering the theme of hospitality, a theme I rather expected to get bogged down in the how to greet a stranger or the old tales of guests that become angels. Hospitality, the way I was trained at the old yacht club as a server to guests with wealth beyond my imagination, the placement of spoons, the creases in the napkins. But Schultz's first words of that beautiful covenant, the fragile art of hospitality, it has awakened this theme in me and also, I will say, muddied what has felt like the simple to-do lists of proper table alignments. The fragile art of hospitality feels different than greeters at the door or a space reserved for visitors. I grew up with parents who collected strangers and strays the way others might collect stamps. From 7th through 12th grades, we had two exchange students, though no one exchanged with them. They just lived with us, a new addition to the family. Then there was the Polish woman and her son, who had a mean temper and lied straight-faced to my parents when I beat him in Nintendo. I clearly am not over that. Who, after talking with my mother in the grocery store line one day, lived across the hall from me for almost all of my 9th grade year. Thanksgivings were had with our church and given families. I still remember the trip my parents took up north to find the perfect table extension so there would always be room. And the stories go on from the free horse who was then made a stable and paddock by my father and grandfather on our front property to the goat who needed to keep the horse company to the cats that now litter the old barn, each named by my father, each named friend. I grew up in an environment that assumed there was space, not only physical, but in the heart and in the psyche. If we didn't have the means to travel, then of course we said yes to the Polish family who happened upon us. If someone showed up at our doorstep to proselytize and shutting off the lights didn't work, then you invited them in for coffee. And in this assumption of if not Elijah, then someone filling that empty seat, I did learn the artistry of hospitality. It seemed effortless to all who entered, I'm sure. The mix of cultures, the large meals that came from a week's worth of leftovers, the laughter that surprised us in the depths of uncertainty. And then also the spontaneity it required to keep the conversation going, to make the food appear, to find a bed, to navigate our own needs with those who arrived. But it was work. It did feel at times rather fragile. Those were not the only messages I received about opening ourselves to the disruption of the guest. I will never forget the darkened room my mother retreated to the Christmas Eve, her jaw locked, unable to eat, let alone speak, unable to greet those who gathered in the house she tired herself to perfect. I will never forget the absence of my aunt's body after hospice collected its last things from our living room that winter. For such a quiet endeavor, for such a small space that her last days required in making room for her final journey, room is all that was left. The poet May Sarton writes, "Lovers and friends, I come to you starved for all you have to give, nourished by the food of solitude. A good instrument for all you have to tell me, for all I have to tell you. We talk of first and last things, listen to music together. No one comes to this house who is not changed. I meet no one here who does not change me." Hospitality as a cultural foundation can be found throughout history and cultures, in ancient Judea, Arabia, India, elsewhere, of course, too. But as a spiritual practice, we find it most notably within the Christian tradition and in the rule of Saint Benedict, a book of rules that helped monks and other followers know how to live. The command of the book is simple. All guests who present themselves are to be welcomed as Christ. In other words, welcomed unconditionally as part of the monk's spiritual practice. And the foundation of that welcome was just as simply said, perhaps, but a harder task in my mind than making up a bed or finding a meal to serve. The foundation is listening. Listen with the ear of your heart, Benedict wrote. Hospital, hospice, hospitable, hospitality, all from the same root word meaning generous, caring, sustaining. In the 5th century, as monasteries formed throughout the world, people in need of care went to these Benedictine monasteries where the spiritual practice of the monks made the physical lives of those in need healthy, cared for, welcomed, loved. We're often introduced to hospitality by way of the ancient stories of welcoming guests at your home because they may be angels. Transaction of sorts, in hopes of a blessing that feels duty-bound rather than empathetic. But hospitality, the way of the Benedictine monks, reminds us of the reciprocity of that discipline, the blessing for all. Henry Nouwen, the great Christian theologian and spiritual director, said, "The real host is the one who offers that space where we do not have to be afraid, and where we can listen to our own inner voices and find our own personal way of being human." Hospitality then simply means providing space. Providing space where life can flourish, yours and theirs. We've each been given such specific rules and lessons, judgments and fears and parameters when it comes to offering what is ours to others. Some of us let people into our hearts more easily than into our homes. For others, welcoming is easy, but relationship is taxing. And we know there are those among us whose boundaries are fluid, whose doors are always open, but their own spirit seeks rest and sanctuary too. Rest and sanctuary that is given up despite their own needs. And then there are at times those unspoken expectations of the ones who welcome, which can be the thing that makes us wish to never return. We need one another. And we want one another in ways that reach beyond the Facebook interaction, the fellowship hour pleasantries, the hello hallway work hellos. We need one another and we want one another, and yet so much seems to get in the way. If our need to impress, to boast, to be secure by way of our things, we're going to get in our own way. If our needs are to care for others over ourselves, that this is where our worth is illustrated and determined, we're going to get in our own way, in the way of the blessing and in the way of the relationship and in the way of providing that fragile and beautiful space for another. That fragile and beautiful space that helps each of us grow too. Thea Jarvis writes, "The value and usefulness of hospitality is more apparent than ever. In our fast-paced, ever-mobile society, intimacy is often suppressed by isolation and loneliness. Widening social and economic gaps foster hunger, homelessness, violence, and fear. Airplanes, cell phones, and email may keep us in touch 24/7, but we still seek that elusive sense of belonging that makes us feel curiously, joyously at home." She concludes, "Admittedly, hospitality won't cure all of our ills. It won't erase underlying problems that promote a climate of division or create a magical panacea for human suffering. But hospitality can help. It can assist and guide us in the way we deal with and ultimately solve our problems. It's background music to the human dance, an old song that still rings true." This month of hospitality as a spiritual practice, I am hoping to hold the one who feels more isolated, more alone, more disconnected, closer and tighter, and with more of a priority than my own stuff about what it means to be hospitable. More than my own fears, more than my own protections. And when it is me that needs to be held a bit closer, be pulled in a bit tighter, I hope that this is we, will insist that in the words of Reverend Jack King, hospitality is about friendship. It's not a house inspection. We need one another, and we want one another. May we make it possible to open our hearts and our space so that we may exchange this fragile but artful blessing together. May it be so, and blessed be.